Welcome to the Ask Sensei Tony podcast, where Sensei will address your questions about life from a cosmic perspective. Please subscribe and ask a question at AskSenseiTony.com to find out more about studying with Sensei privately, becoming a part of our spiritual community, and training to become a mindful minister of oneness in our seminary. We hope you enjoy this episode and find it helpful.
Hi, this is Ask Sensei Tony, and the question for this episode is, what is the best practice of meditation for me? What is the best practice of meditation for me? Okay. And this comes from Jamie. So Jamie, that's a very good question. And the reason it's a good question is because sometimes the way the practice of meditation is presented, it's presented in such a way that there's the assumption that everybody will benefit from this particular approach to meditation. And while I will say that the human mind and brain, have some pretty universal implications, so that, you know, there's probably a lot of generalities, the fact of the matter is, where a person happens to be when they, for example, come to me and want to learn to meditate, the trajectory of their life at that time, what they're going through, all those kind of things, you know, their personality, all those things can affect, you know, what kind of meditation practice that I might encourage for them. But even more importantly, I will share with them, a variety of practices that are effective, and then essentially have them experiment to find what works for them, and, you know, help them understand that if they find a particular form of meditation that's useful now, that doesn't mean that other forms of meditation might not come into play at a later date. And I honestly look at meditation sort of like a buffet. You know, you go to the buffet and you're going to be attracted to something. You know, you're going to look at food that you like and you know you like, and you're going to probably go there first. And if you're more adventurous, you know, you might try something else. Or if you're bored, you might try something else. And then you might discover something new that you really love. You know, you go to the buffet and it's like, oh, I've never tried that before. Yeah, that's my new favorite, right? So that kind of thing can happen. Or you may try something new and you're like, oh, I'm going back to my old faithful. So I think of meditation that way. And so that's the first thing I want to say. That kind of creates this sort of foundation. The next thing is that I think it's really important for us to understand what meditation is. So meditation, the word itself that's translated as meditation, at least from a Buddhist perspective, is samadhi. And the word samadhi can be translated in a variety of different ways. It can be translated as concentration, meditation, recollection, so there's a lot of different ways you can understand that word. From the mindfulness perspective, meditation is it's one leg of the three-legged stool of the way we practice in the four-direction system. So we start with precepts, and then we go to meditation, and then we go to the mindfulness practices, the analytical practices. And meditation's purpose, I believe, in the way I present it, has two parts. The first part is to use meditation as a way to enhance your ability to be mindful. So that by learning how to accept all of your thoughts, feelings, and sensations as experiences that you're having, sensorial experiences you're having, through the different sense organs of the body, but they're not your identity. and they're not, you're fixed to it. In other words, they're, you know, a simple example of that would be that if I'm feeling angry, that's an accurate way to describe it. I'm having the emotion of anger. But we tend to make ontological statements, you know, statements about our being. So instead of saying, right now I'm experiencing angry feelings or angry emotions or anger in my body. And there's a tendency for us to say, I'm angry. And we don't realize how powerful words are. You know, words are the fingers that, you know, that sort of shape the mind. And so when I say, I'm angry, I'm telling my whole self that I am anger. Well, that's a lot harder to deal with than just saying, I'm having an angry feeling, an angry reaction, an angry emotion. So the key to meditation is learning to observe with non-judgmental awareness. And that's really important, non-judgmental, which means that I naturally am going to find myself attached to certain thoughts and feelings, and I'm also going to find that I have more of an aversion to certain types of thoughts and feelings. And so I don't want to do that anymore. I want to create a spaciousness with those thoughts, feelings, and sensations so that I can start to realize they're not my true identity. And I can start to realize my true self, which has the capacity for this luminous observation. And by doing that, I am able to allow everything to come up. In other words, I can allow the unconscious to become conscious. And I can take all the stuff that's been hidden and bring it out. You know, it's like a, I often think of it like in the spring when you have yard sales. I'm going to take it all out of the darkness of the basement. The attic, and I'm going to bring it out and put it on the lawn. You know? So that way I can see everything, and I can't be sabotaged by the things that I've repressed. That's what meditation is primarily for, in my opinion, in the way we teach it in the four direction system of mindfulness. And in order to do that, The main thing that we want to do is be able to have a way that when we start watching, that we can, if we get too caught up in an attachment to a thought or feeling or sensation, or if we get too much aversion to a thought, feeling, or sensation or having, that we can use our breath to kind of free us up and bring us back to the moment, you know? So like if we're daydreaming. You know, we can. It's always bad. You know, a lot of imagination and creativity comes from that. But in meditation, if I find myself kind of drifting off like that, it's okay. No problem. No judgment. I just want to use my breath to bring me back. So I might just bring myself back to the present moment. And, you know, that's it. Breathing is important. In the sense that you want to learn to breathe from the diaphragm, which is like, you know, 2 inches below your navel, is like the center of your physical self, but it's also a nice template point for breathing diaphragmically. You breathe from the diaphragm, you're going to get more oxygen to your body, you're going to release more carbon from the bloodstream, and you're going to, your brain feeds mostly on oxygen. In fact, that's why we that's why we yawn. Excuse me. It's because we're trying to get more oxygen to the brain. So it's a wonderful thing to do. If you can breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth, that's ideal. Sometimes you can't do that. So you got to just breathe however you can breathe. Breathe only through your nose or breathe only through your mouth. That's okay. But the point is you're using the breath as a way to bring you back to a balanced state so that as we all know, with a little bit of recollection or just reflection, that the respiration state, the way we're breathing, is intimately connected with the way we're thinking and feeling. You know, so if I'm bored, my breathing is going to be really slow. If I'm angry, you know, my breathing might get very shallow. So, you know, respiration is intimately connected to the mental state. So if you control the breathing a little bit, you help balance out the respiration state. The other thing that meditation, I think, does is that it helps balance out the autonomic nervous system. In other words, that you have this nervous system that's designed to protect you, essentially, through the, you know, fight or flight mechanism or freeze mechanism in the body, from the reptilian brain, you know, lower part of the evolutionary brain. And, you know, so we have this sympathetic system that, you know, reacts to that by, you know, pushing a message to our adrenal glands to release cortisol into our bloodstream and, you know, pulling the blood away from our extremities. So that's why when people often are in that fight or flight mode, that their hands can get cold or feel cold. When you're going through that experience, then your body has this natural homeostasis seeking system. And that's one of the things I think from a cosmic perspective that you can notice, is that the universe seems to have an inclination towards homeostasis, of trying to constantly achieve the balance, the yin and yang. And so the parasympathetic system tries to, you know, bring you back to a certain balance point. And I have found that meditation really is effective at helping to do that. And that idea, there's so many different benefits physiologically from meditation, and that's often what gets touted, you know. And then meditation becomes kind of like a cure-all. And worse, meditation then is seen as some activity that you do separately from mindfulness. And that's where I would argue that's a mistake, that meditation is a handmaiden or an assistant to mindful inquiry, to what's the old, the ancient language, I think it's Pali, is apamana. It's the idea of being conscientious. It means to, and that word, you know, take con, science. So con, it means it's connected, and science is knowledge. And the conscientious, the us, that represents the action or the activity. So it's the activity of knowing oneness. It's the activity of knowing interconnectedness. And so meditation is a wonderful way to help you experience that. And however, it in my opinion, if it's practiced apart from precept and mindful inquiry and analysis, you're just not getting the full benefit. Now, that being said, you know, how do you do it? You know, so I think you can learn to meditate in any posture. Now, certainly, if you can be in a posture that allows the spinal cord to be in its natural sort of S system, that I think aids, you know, that aids your ability to sort of help the body balance itself out. But, you know, I have people I've worked with that have been bedridden from maybe a disorder or disease. And I've also had people in wheelchairs. So, you know, so it can be practiced in any form, you know, besides necessarily certain yoga postures. I find that it can be practiced by walking. You know, and the legend of walking meditation comes from the mythos of the Buddha, where after his awakening, you know, he's pondering how he's going to share what he's experienced and help other people to have a similar experience of oneness, of the oneness of all life. And so his walking about the the Bodhi tree, the tree of enlightenment, the people tree. I think it's people. It's a type of banyan tree, I believe. And it's that bow tree, that sacred tree, is what he walks around. And so he, you know, does this in a certain way, according to the stories, you know. And so that's been handed down to us as the practice of walking meditation. Now, in walking meditation, it can be very slow and deliberate from heel to toe, following the breath, or it can take on other forms. I honestly recommend just sauntering, you know, and I love the word saunter, which is, it comes from a French word that was related to people going on these long pilgrimage walks, saunter. And Thoreau, Henry David Thoreau, used that term. I've adopted that. And sauntering just means to walk without any particular destination. And while you're walking, you know, you do the same thing. You sort of just allow everything to come and go without identifying with it. It's a very powerful way to practice. Of course, there are traditional sort of Asian ways to do things. So there's Indian yogic practices, you know. Most people are familiar with Hatha Yoga, you know, the Dharma Dog, Child's Pose, you know, that kind of. Another way is like Tai Chi, or like Tai Sabaki, which is a form that I created, which, you know, incorporates elements from Chinese and Japanese martial art and, you know, increase big, deep breathing that you find like in Qigong. And Tai Chi. Only my approach to Tai Sabaki is a much more simple approach, and it's much easier to learn than some of the long forms in Tai Chi. But again, any kind of practice can kind of become that meditative practice, you know. So maybe when you're exercising, you can use it as a way to kind of focus, you know, on the breath and focus on what you're doing. And whatever thoughts and feelings come up, or sensations, you know, you just learn to let them come and go, and you don't engage them. And again, as long as that practice is helping you to create a spaciousness within yourself, or which you're not identifying with your thoughts, feelings, and sensations as who you are, it works. There's a second kind of meditative practice that is also very wonderful, and this practice is kind of, you know, there's different clever ways people talked about it over the millennia. It's, you know, the type of meditation that has no purpose. In Japanese, it's called shikantaza, and that can be translated as just sitting, but the deeper meaning is just being. And so I think of it, the practice of just being. We call this to abide. We call this the abiding practice. And that means to just abide, where I don't have any particular goal or desire or direction of my mind state. I might still become aware of my breathing, but really, this kind of practice, this kind of contemplative practice, is for me more of a spiritual manifestation of the clarity that my worth, my value, my dignity as a being is not predicated by the things I do or have, or can't do or don't have. It's like sticking my flag in the ground of just being, you know, pointing to the ground, bearing witness to my true self and my Buddha nature. And that's a wonderful practice, just abide. And sometimes what I'll do is I'll just abide. And other times I will begin by practicing, you know, watching the breath, kind of more intentionally, you know, observing. But I always end with abiding. And one thing I didn't talk about is that the way the chanting or the use of a mantra, I actually really usually I'll have people try that first before they just watch the breath, or maybe they'll count their in or out breath as a way of bringing themselves to the present moment. And mantras are beautiful, you know. And you can, a nice amount of mantras, you can start doing a mantra no matter how you're feeling. So if you're angry, you can yell it, Namo Buddha Bosa. Or if you're upset, you can cry, Kanjiza Bosa. Or, you know, you're just feeling groovy. Namo. Or you can sing it. Namo. Is no matter what state of mind you come into when you start it, it'll just sort of calm everything down, and you'll find that you're in that nice spaciousness. So that's pretty cool. But again, all this information is in my books for your mind. Three Principles of Oneness. And another way to meditate is liturgically, which you would find in our Book of Common Meditation. Again, you can get these at my website at senseitony.com. Go to the store portion, you know, click on the store, or you can get them on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But a liturgical way of meditating is where meditation takes place within the context of maybe a reading and a reflection and the offering of incense and chanting. It's quite beautiful. I find it to be the most enjoyable way to meditate. So, Jamie, I hope that was helpful in answering your question. If you have further questions or you'd like to study with me privately, and that's true for everyone listening, if you go to asksenseitony.com, you can select a private session with me, and we can go further, go deeper. So I hope that is useful. Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask Sensei Tony. Please visit our website at asksenseitony.com, check out Sensei's books and videos, and become a part of the Dragonfly spiritual lifestyle.